Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, it is a Wednesday. It is an absolute pleasure to have you here live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, we're on Fox Sports Radio, we're on FS1. I am not cutting my hair until next year, and I don't care what anybody says. I boycotted coffee. That only lasted 2 days. I am boycotting haircuts. We live in a boycott time now, right? People are boycotting NASCAR. By the way, NASCAR ratings were up last two races. Sorry, boycott crowd. Good to have you in. Joy's on vacation for a while. John Goulet will be doing the news today. It is great to have you here. So I have this sort of rule. So I used to work at another company. You know that one. And then I came to this company, and I used to work with a guy over there. He's still a friend, very talented. He used to always tell me all he cared about was having fun. Yeah, all he cared about was having fun. And I said, I'm about work, and if I work hard enough, I'll have fun. But it starts with the work. And about 6 months ago, he called me. He was miserable. I was like, what about all the fun? You're a fun guy. But in the process of having fun, the ratings aren't very good for a show, and management's on his butt, and he's not having any fun. I'm like, I said, fun cannot be your fastball. Fun can be your curve. Work has to be your fastball. And if your fastball is good, the curve works better. If your fastball is work hard, Russell Wilson, then you do have fun. If your fastball is work, Tom Brady, then you do have fun. Randy Moss says Cam Newton, who, by the way, has always owned the world on fun, is going to make New England just a party time in New England. Now, it's all fun. Here's Randy Moss.
I think we are getting ready to really see how fun that offense can really be. You know, not discrediting anything that Tom accomplished because he accomplished some great things, but I think being able to have a guy like Cam Newton that can run the ball, there is going to be a change in New England, but I think we're going to see them having a lot more fun out there, and Cam Newton is going to give them that opportunity for the fans, not just the New England Patriot fans, but the football fans just around the world to really see, you know, how fun this offense can really be.
That's ridiculous. Are they going to win 13, 14 games in the Super Bowl? No. So they're not going to have as much fun. You think fans care about fun? Ooh, cool run by the quarterback. Fans want touchdowns. Fans want wins. I guarantee you there's never been a Patriot fan in the history of Foxborough that has left the stadium on a loss and said, you know, that was a fun way to spend 3 hours getting our teeth kicked in. Sports is fun if you win. This is why players don't make good coaches. Almost never. Because too many players put a premium on fun. Rex Ryan's teams were fun. Jerry Glanville's teams were fun. The late Sam Weiss's teams were fun. You know who's not fun? The grumpy Mount Rushmore of Belichick, Chuck Knoll, Tom Coughlin, Bill Parcells, and Bill Cowher. The grumpy Hall of Fame. They got 15 Super Bowls. I mean, I like Bruce Arians a lot. He's a good guy, and I think he can coach. He's Mr. Loose and Fun. 7 years as a head coach. One playoff win. That's not fun. If fun is your fastball, it's not going to work. Your fastball's got to be what Russell Wilson's fastball is and what Tom Brady's fastball is. It's the work. And then it becomes fun. Yeah, I used to know a guy. I still know him. He's at the other place. He's a fun guy. Last time I talked to him, he's miserable. Because he didn't put a premium on the work and the prep. He puts a premium on the fun. I've never been happier. I love coming to work. You know, some wins. Winning. Sales. Ads. Revenue. Winning. This whole thing about fun, it cracks me up. Cam has always been fun. He owns that space. The fashion, the image, he owns it. It's the winning thing everybody struggles with. I mean, if I played the two-word game with Russell Wilson, it would be athletic and focused. If I played the two-word game with Tom Brady, it would be obsessive and championships. You play the two-word game with Cam, it's fun and image. That's not the issue with the Camster. And I've said, it's very easy to take an obsessed guy like a Russell Wilson and a Tom Brady and lighten them up a little bit. it's much different to take a really fun guy, a chill guy, not as focused guy, and make him determined for the next 4.5 months. I think he could do it, but I don't think it's easy. I think it's going to be much easier for Brady to lighten up a little than Cam to get so serious, so into it, so focused. I mean, I don't care about the celebrations. I don't care about that stuff. We're showing celebrations. Gronk celebrates. I mean, it's not like New England can't have guys that have fun. Gronk had a lot of fun. Brady has a lot of fun. But, you know, we've always said this. It's the coaches that fail in this league come in and they're soft and they try to get tough, Wade Phillips. But Tom Coughlin was brutally tough and lightened up and won two Super Bowls. It's just like dads. Dads can be rough on kids and tough and loud and lighten up. But if the dad's a cream puff and then tries to act tough and ground you and the kids roll their eyes. So the fun component, nobody in New England's going to have fun winning 9 games and finishing second to the Buffalo Bills or third behind the Bills and the Dolphins. I don't care how flashy, dynamic, the touchdowns, nobody's going to think that's a good time. A good time in Foxborough. And remember, football is a sport about attention to detail. It's timed. It's officiated. It's choreographed. It's not baseball. You got a clock. You got very little time. If one guy moves their finger, boom, illegal motion. It's an attention to detail thing. So that's why the people that succeed in football have fun with the process of working. Brady loves looking at film all day. So it starts with the work, and if the work is good, the fun follows. But you can't start with fun, otherwise you're going to get increasingly miserable because nobody around you wants losing in this league. And Cam hasn't had back-to-back winning seasons. It may work, but I don't want to hear about it's going to be more fun now. No. It is not going to be more fun now because they're not going to win as much now without Tom Brady. So I saw this quote from Draymond Green. I tell you, I bumped into him at the fight when Tyson Fury fought Wilder. He liked me. I liked him. Anywho. So he says he's picking the Lakers to win the championship because of one guy. You know who the one guy is. Here's Draymond Green.
The Lakers got to be the favorite because, like, they got LeBron, and that he can kind of adjust to anything. And I think he's probably the most disciplined pair we've ever seen in the NBA. And that's going to matter going into this bubble. And so I think, you know, having LeBron on your team going into this bubble gives you a slight advantage.
LeBron's not going to win the championship. The only question for LeBron is when he doesn't win it, how much does he blow up this organization and get a real star player alongside he and Anthony Davis? Folks, LeBron's, we have a history with LeBron. He's 3-6 in the finals. When he has help, he gets the 3. When he doesn't have enough help, he gets the 6. They're not winning because they just lost Avery Bradley. And I know what you're saying. What's Avery Bradley? He's a piece. Nobody's winning it by themselves. If they did, LeBron would be 9-0 in the finals. The reason Michael Jordan, we just watched the documentary, went 6-6 in finals because he had Scottie Pippen in all of them, and then Dennis Rodman in some, and then Phil Jackson, the greatest coach in the modern era. Michael didn't do anything out of college into the NBA without Scottie Pippen, without Phil Jackson. Didn't do anything. Couldn't get past the Pistons. That's the best basketball player ever, and I think LeBron's first or second best basketball player ever. Magic doesn't win the titles if he doesn't inherit Kareem, and he doesn't get Pat Riley, probably one of the smartest two or three people that's ever been in the NBA. LeBron's not winning the championship. It's not a knock on LeBron. He didn't have enough pieces. Is everybody forgetting that Avery Bradley is their third best defensive player? That he would have been on the floor in the final few minutes of these playoff games? Like, when they go to the bubble now, if there's 3.5 minutes left and they're tied with the Clippers, Avery Bradley would have been on the floor. He plays 24 to 25 minutes a night, gives you 8.5 points, 44% from the field, 36% on threes, and he is their third best defender after Anthony Davis and LeBron, according to defensive win shares. He would have been on the floor, not Jared Cook or Jared Dudley or Quinn Cook. So now what it comes down to is more on LeBron's shoulders, and we've seen that happen 6 times in the NBA Finals, and he's lost each one. That's not in any way a shot at LeBron James. The only question for the Lakers is when they lose to the Clippers or Milwaukee or Boston. And I think Boston really has too many good players, and I think the Clippers have too many good players. Then what does LeBron do next? But right now, without Avery Bradley, who would be on the floor late in games, a two-way player, a defendable veteran, high IQ, this is LeBron's kind of guy. And that's why he's playing for the Lakers. It's LeBron's kind of guy. They had all the young guys. They move out. He gets Avery Bradley. It's not a coincidence. They started moving older veteran players in. Danny Green, LeBron wanted him. He was on the market. Avery Bradley, LeBron wanted him. He was on the market. Why? veteran players, high IQ, get the game, play both ways, and Avery's gone. So now the rotation, I mean, the Lakers' playoff hopes are down to LeBron, AD, Danny Green, and cross your fingers. That's not a championship-winning formula. Not when you have a stacked Clippers, a stacked Celtics, and a very good Milwaukee team. And by the way, don't count out Toronto. A lot of veterans, I just don't know if they have enough shot makers at the end of the clock. But the question's going to become, this is not about, I mean, anytime you say they'll win it because of LeBron, folks, you can't depend solely on LeBron. And nope, this is one of these stories in sports nobody's paying attention to. Avery Bradley's a real player. He is a real player on a championship team. 24 minutes, 9 points a game, 44% from the field, third best defensive player. Kyle Kuzma's been a Laker for 3 years. We looked it up this morning. Does he have a game-winning shot with the Lakers? I'm not sure he does. I don't think he has a shot under 12 seconds in any Laker game for the win. He may. I looked it up this morning, couldn't find it. That's what the playoffs are. Close games, big shots late. I don't think Kuzma has one. By the way, Nick Wright and I talked about this last week, about the value of Avery Bradley. You know, you just think he's just a guy, but Toronto last year won the championship with a bunch of people we thought outside of Kawhi were just guys. The playoffs is about veterans, two-way players, depth, situational excellence, 45% shooting, hit a three, make a stop. I mean, that's what playoff basketball is about. Avery Bradley was good for that. I mean, Avery Bradley was a key component to this team. He's just a guy. Toronto was full of just a guys last year, and they won the championship. Here's Nick Wright talking about now that Avery's out, what do they do?
It does put the Lakers in a tougher spot. It does put more on LeBron. And they have one of three options, and two of them are fine here, Colin. They'll probably sign my buddy JR, which makes me happy, but he probably won't be a big part of the rotation. Option one is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope replaces Avery in the starting lineup. That's what they did when Avery missed games. Option two is Alex Caruso replace Avery in the starting lineup. That's the one I would go with. Option three is the only one where if they go this way, I'm going to be like, man, Colin and his damn beloved Clippers might have an edge finally. And that's if they end up starting Rondo. Rondo has been a negative player for this team. If he ends up getting the starting lineup spot, that's going to be really bad for the Lakers.
Yeah, I don't know who's going to get the starting spot. But, you know, once you heap more on LeBron, we have a history. It doesn't work.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
In sports, I think most of us think sports is pretty good right now. I mean, obviously with COVID, we're crossing our fingers. But, I mean, the Yankees and Dodgers are good in baseball. A lot of our traditional powers, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Bama are good in college football. In the NFL, we've got like Mahomes, Lamar Jackson. We've still got Breeze and Brady. We got young stars. We got old stars. I mean, the NBA, LeBron's one of the best players ever, and he's rolling. The Lakers are good. The Celtics are good. It's a lot of traditional powers. The New York Knicks have a brand. I don't think it's nearly as good as people think, but this is one of these what could have been in sports. LeBron James, when he was in Cleveland, according to Bill Simmons, wanted to be a Knick. I mean, let's be honest. The late Kobe Bryant used to say there was nothing like playing in New York. Phil Jackson took a job in New York. LeBron talked about New York. New York is special. Michael Jordan loved playing in New York. There's something about it. The fans, whatever. But this is the classic what could have been in sports. LeBron goes Cleveland to Miami. He met with New York, and here's what apparently transpired.
From everyone I've talked to in the know since then, it's clear that the Knicks were the first choice. And I'm sorry, Knicks fans, earmuffs, but it was basically the Knicks to lose, and they just couldn't stay out of their own way. And the stories are legendary. Well, they had the legendary meeting. Donnie Walsh was in the wheelchair, and Dolan was Dolan, and it was just a complete, they didn't have anything prepared, and it just couldn't have gone worse by all accounts. It was a disaster.
Which is frustrating for fans. Now, some historical context. Every big brand in American sports, every one has had droughts. Alabama football went 18 years of Dennis Franchione and Mike DeBose and Mike Shula. They were zero titles in 18 years, and Alabama was a big nothing burger. Green Bay Packers won Super Bowl II and Super Bowl 31. In between, not much to talk about. They had some bad years when I was a kid for about 15 straight years. The Yankees went 12 years without even making the playoffs in the mid to late 80s and early 90s. I mean, the Cowboys haven't won a Super Bowl in 25 years. Everybody has a drought. The problem, those are solvable droughts, we mostly think. Alabama can hire the right football coach, right? Like, you can get the right coach or the right quarterback. You know, I mean, people in U.S. in L.A. complain about USC football, and I'm like, they won the Rose Bowl 4 years ago. they beat a college football power, Penn State. It's been 4 years. And even last year, they weren't unwatchable. I mean, they lose to Notre Dame now. They shouldn't lose to Notre Dame as often as they do, but it's, you know, you can watch the games. They've got NFL-level players sometimes. But what's scary for the Knicks is that it's James Dolan, and he doesn't have any interest selling the team. So that becomes unsolvable. It's not the right GM, the right coach, the right star player. They've got the wrong owner. And from Donald Sterling to the Detroit Lions to the Cubs for years to an aged Al Davis, if the owner's bad, you're bad. And it's unsolvable. The second issue, do the Knicks really have a brand? Because think about this. They have the losingest playoff win percentage in the NBA this century. They've got 8 division titles in their history and 23 last place finishes. What is their brand? So the last time, Dolan bought them in 99. They've been irrelevant for 20 years. And since most of us don't start watching TV in sports till about we're 6 or 7, 8 years old, that means for anybody that's 28 and younger, they're irrelevant. Because they've been irrelevant for 20 years. So the question now, it's a bad draft, there's no free agents, and they've got a stink on the franchise that no free agents want to play there. So I don't think it's unreasonable to say they're going to be irrelevant for at least the next 4 years, maybe 5. So that would be 25 years of irrelevance. And if kids don't watch TV sports and really, you know, start building their loyalty to about 7, 8 years old, 25 plus 7 or 8 is 32. Meaning nobody under 32 years old sees them as a brand. Translation, free agents. Kevin Durant talks about that. What is their brand?
I think a lot of fans look at the Knicks as a brand and expect these younger players who, in their lifetime, don't remember the Knicks being good. I didn't grow up with the Knicks. Well, I seen the Knicks in the finals, but kids coming up after me didn't see that. So that whole brand of the Knicks to them is not as cool as, let's say, the Golden State Warriors or even the Lakers or the Nets now. You know what I'm saying? It's like the cool thing right now is not the Knicks.
My question is, if they're bad for 4 more years and they don't have a star player now, it's not a good free agent year or a draft year, and they've got a stink that's going to hurt them for at least the next 4 to 5 years, that makes 25 years of irrelevance. Kids don't really start getting into a brand or a team until they're 6, 7, or 8 years old. Nobody under 32 even sees them as a brand. I mean, that between Dolan and that, you've got yourself something that may not recover.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So this morning, I have no problem borrowing great ideas. So I was fishing around the internet the other night. And Mark Madden's a very popular host in Pittsburgh, and he has, through the years, been critical of Mike Tomlin. And he, in one of his tweets or something yesterday, he said, and Mark does a really good job, and he said, you know, if you were hiring a football coach to take over the Steelers today, and there was every coach available, would Tomlin be one of your, you know, your guys? And I thought, that's interesting. Not only about Tomlin, but about if I, so I thought, what if I owned a football team? I mean, wouldn't that be a dream for all of us? So I'll never be able to own a football team, but let's just play a game that I come up with an amazing invention that nobody ever thought of. And I thought a lot about this last night, and this has never happened. I Googled it. Nobody's ever come up with this. I think it's going to be huge. So I came up with nachos in a can, and I got really rich fast. So you remember Cheese Whiz? So it's nachos in a can, and everybody loves it. I mean, the whole world loves nachos in a can.
Like there's chips in it?
Yeah, there's everything.
Like you just eat it whole?
So you start serving nachos in a big can, and America just goes crazy, and it becomes mine, and I get a patent for it, and I'm Chef Cowherd's nachos in a can.
I got heartburned looking at that picture.
So it just gets gigantic. Chicken nachos are even bigger, so I'm worth several billion. So I thought, okay, now I want to hire a coach. and I want to own this team for a long time, right? And I want the number one thing I want is stability, because all of us would admit, right? Like, stability matters. I mean, that's almost everything in this league. Unstable, you know, Raiders during Al Davis at the end, Cleveland, Detroit. Stability is everything. So I don't want to hire coaches in their 60s. Even if they're great, you know, Pete Carroll, 67, Belichick, Saban. I love Andy Reid, but I don't want to hire a second coach. I want to hire the future of football. And I thought, here's the five criteria. So age matters. Number two, are they easy to work with? I don't care how successful you are. I own a team. I created nachos in a can. I want to sit in some team meetings. I don't want difficult power control freak guy. That ends Belichick. Number three, I don't want NFL controversy. I just bought a team. I don't want to answer questions about your legacy. Sean Payton's got some baggage. Belichick's got some baggage. Pete's got some. I'm not interested in that stuff. I want an innovative thinker, and then I want somebody that relates to players. It's a players' league more than ever. If you're struggling with some of the current things that are happening in America, you're just not my cat. Like, let's get it right. And so I thought, okay, here's the 10 guys. We'll go 10 through 1 I would hire as a football coach. And I thought it was an interesting idea. So here we go. Here's number 10.
Number 10.
I would do Mike Tomlin. He's great with players. He's still only 48 years old. He's got the second most wins since he was hired in the NFL to Bill Belichick. Now, you don't love what he's always done in the postseason, but he's got a couple of Super Bowls, 10-plus wins in 8 of his 13 seasons. He dominates his rivals, owns Cleveland and Cincinnati, and I think Mike Tomlin is built for the future of the NFL. Players like him. And he's also shown he can deal with drama in a locker room. It blows up a lot of teams. It never blows up Mike Tomlin. Also, he is the best coach at a podium, and there is no second place in league history. So Tomlin makes my list.
Number 9.
I think Urban Meyer, who's been fishing around the NFL for a year, asking a lot of questions and going to games, is fascinating. And folks, after Saban, or maybe including Saban, he's the greatest college football coach of all time. He's only one of three coaches to lead multiple teams to championships. Florida, Ohio State, the other two are Pop Warner and Nick Saban, and Saban's in his 60s. Urban Meyer's in his mid-50s. I think he's real tasty, and I think he cares now. I think he's got 10 more years to coach. I don't think he's going to end his career as an administrator and a broadcaster.
Number 8.
Lincoln Riley, I think, is the best smart young offensive coach in college football, and I'd roll the dice with him. Now, whereas I can like Mike Tomlin and he's got Super Bowls, there are also things about Tomlin, lack of details, that drive me nuts. This kid's a detail freak. I think Lincoln Riley's unbelievable. They hired him at 33 years old. And of all the history of Oklahoma, best record ever first 3 years. That includes Barry Switzer, Bob Stoops, Bud Wilkinson. And by the way, what is the thing he's best at? Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts. He is the quarterback whisperer. I think this is who I would have hired if I was the Dallas Cowboys. This is who I would have hired, and I don't care how much it would have cost.
Number 7.
I'm a big fan of Brian Flores. I think you're looking at the one Belichick assistant that's going to work. He's not afraid to take a lot of what Belichick does and just copy it, which is, I've never understood why everybody struggles with that. He likes corners, and he'll pay for them. I mean, his big thing now, he's rebuilding the O-line. He gets the quarterback, and he pays money for defense and specifically corners. They were 5-4 down the stretch last year, including beating New England. He is a no-nonsense guy. Now, I don't know how he's going to deal with some players, because this guy is, there's no BS with him. But I said this last year in September when they were getting drilled. They had the makings of a fascinating football culture. Don't just think losing record means losing culture and bad coach. I think Flores is the Belichick disciple who becomes a star.
Number 6.
Matt Nagy. Folks, he's 20. The Bears are 20-12 since hiring Matt Nagy with Mitch Trubisky. Mitch Trubisky has a winning record with Matt Nagy. Do I need to say anything? And I got nothing against Trubisky. Folks, he won a division with Mitch Trubisky, a division with Aaron Rodgers. He's worked with Andy Reid. Andy, who I know well, speaks incredibly high of him. And if you watch the Bears games, they're a little bit like the 49ers. Incredibly multiple, incredibly deceptive. He won a division on coaching, on smoke and mirrors. Matt Nagy, 6.
Number 5.
I think John Harbaugh, again, a guy 57 years old, gets it. He's the more agreeable Harbaugh. He's got a Super Bowl. I think his pivot to Lamar Jackson has been really smart, and I think the players are into it. One of the things I think Baltimore does very well, he's really good with personnel. He's got a tremendous eye for talent. Some coaches, you know, we've said this about Belichick. I don't like Belichick's drafts. Harbaugh's eye for talent is significant and redeemable. I'd have him in the list.
Number 4.
But it is an offensive game. It really is going forward. Rules, legislation. Sean McVay would be my number 4. On that picture, he almost looks like Harbaugh. Sean McVay got to a Super Bowl. I mean, they hired Sean McVay. He was 30 years old. He has won 9 games in every season as the Rams head coach. Now, I did not like the Gurley acquisition or the contract or the Brandon Cook acquisition. That's not on him. I think if he can get the interior of the offensive line right, the Jared Goff contract within a year is going to look just fine. Super sharp. He's got a system. He's got to tweak it. But some of the issues he had last year, I do not blame on Sean McVay.
Number 3.
Doug Peterson. I watched him outcoach Belichick and the Patriots in the Super Bowl. I had my doubts. I did not think he was going to be this. Another Andy Reid disciple. I mean, he's the 4th person to ever win a championship as a player and a coach. Mike Ditka, Tom Flores, and Tony Dungy. He has, to me, he's a really good big game coach. If you go watch what they did down the stretch last year and the crises they had to maneuver around. They had no receivers. Offensive line and defensive line issues. He has had a lot thrown at him. A lot of pressure, a lot of injuries, a lot of instability on perimeter positions. He's handled all of it well. Carson Wentz injuries, Nick Foles emerging. He's been dealing with a lot of noise for several years, and he's hit it out of the park.
Number 2.
Most underrated coach in the league is Sean McDermott of Buffalo. I know it's an offensive league. Folks, winning in Buffalo is harder. Free agents don't want to play there. The weather's lousy in November and December. 9 wins in 2 or 3 seasons in Buffalo. His eye for personnel is unbelievable. His defense last year was filthy good. It wasn't as dynamic as San Francisco's defense, but if you watch them play, man, they remind me of Belichick. His players are never in the wrong spot. Now, can he develop Josh Allen? Well, he did enough last year. Josh Allen can be a little bit of the wild pony here. Like you're not sure what direction he's going to go in. But when I watch this team, I see personnel excellence. I see consistency. I see players in the right spot. I see a team that never beats themselves. They just need a deep threat. They don't get any cheap touchdowns. Stephon Diggs gives you that.
Number 1.
Kyle Shanahan. I know he's had a couple Super Bowl moments you don't love, but I think San Francisco was right. I think he's intense. I think he's got the lineage from his dad. I think he has a system, but he is nimble enough to manipulate the system and listen to John Lynch and others. I think he's obsessively driven, which is probably most of these guys. But if I start my franchise today, I get the dad, I get him, I get playoff experience. And I also think he's got a chip on his shoulder because he thinks he should have won that Super Bowl last year, and he thinks he should have won that Atlanta Super Bowl against New England when he was the OC. So that would be my 10. How's that? What do you make of that, Goulet?
I think people on the internet are going to not like you again.
You know what? They're jealous of my hair. At this point, it's just sad. It's hate. That's my 10. Now, I know what you're saying to yourself. You know, Tomlin won a Super Bowl. What about Urban Meyer? Listen, Tom Coughlin was in Boston College, ended up beating Belichick twice in a Super Bowl. Pete Carroll has done great. You know, Jim Harbaugh, actually, you could argue, did better NFL than college. So I think Lincoln Riley and Urban Meyer would absolutely be guys I would consider to be a head coach.
I don't disagree with that. I think the problem I might have is the guy you have ahead of both of them in Brian Flores.
Listen, you can't just buy Amazon as a stock. You can't just buy Apple or Google. Occasionally, you have to buy a $24 stock and watch it grow. You got to buy Shopify when it was $140 and now it's $900. It's not just all about going to your stockbroker. I'll just take all the big stocks. You got to find value. To me, there's 2 guys in this I believe are value guys. Matt Nagy and Flores are value guys. That they won't make a lot of top 10s, but both have had issues. First of all,
Flores is trying to turn around a mess for the last decade, and Nagy's got a quarterback who I think is incredibly limited. So to me, those are my value stocks. Six, and I didn't put them one or two.
It's kind of like getting in early on nachos in a can.
Yeah, so let's do that again. I created nachos in a can, and everybody loved it, and it just took off. It was bigger than Google.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
The Cam Newton story is interesting. I think he makes them better, but as I like Vegas, I think they're a 9-win team instead of a 7-win team if he sticks. But Eric Mangini knows a lot more about this than I do or anybody watching my show. The fans and the media think it's a revolution in New England. I do not. I think it's a one-year deal at most. I think they want to get a look at that kind of offensive talent at quarterback because I think next year they'll be drafting either Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, or a college guy that can move. That's my theory on it, is let's just kind of look at how the game is changing, and we've built up a lot of equity, and I don't think it's going to be a revolution, but Eric Mangini is now joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network from Cape Cod. Okay, so let's just start. You know the culture. You know its strengths, its liabilities. Does Cam in New England work, in your opinion?
Yeah, I was shocked when this happened. And I've said all along, I didn't think it would happen because in New England, they want a starter. They don't want a star. And when it did happen, I was trying to think of some analogy or metaphor that worked. And it was like a yoga studio to Studio 54 when you go from Tom Brady to Cam Newton. It's just radically different. And really, the only person that has risk is Cam Newton. They're getting a guy for zero guaranteed money. At least that's what it sounds like. I can't find anything that talks about any guaranteed money that he gets. So you get him for the veteran minimum with incentives. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. New England moves on. It's a lottery ticket. For Cam, though, if it doesn't work out, it looks really bad.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'm going to say with Cam is that he's going to have to adjust to the Patriot way. And that's the reality of it. There's no officers club in New England. You don't get treated differently in New England. And if you're not going to adjust to the Patriot way, they're going to move on from you. And they have very little reason or pushback or fallback because of how little they've invested in you.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I said this yesterday, is that in Carolina, because he was a number one pick, he had to work. So you had to find, at least for 4 or 5 years, you invested so much time and money and marketing in Cam that it had to work, and you had to make it work. In New England, they've invested nothing in him. So, you know, if 3 weeks into practice, the culture don't connect, it's like, what do we care? But not that he was coddled in Carolina, but it had to work there. And so they were willing to, make sacrifices on coaches? I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah, when you draft someone as high as they drafted Cam, you have got to do everything possible to make it work. Now this is his second team. He's coming off an injury. They have no guaranteed money invested in him. It's $7.5 million with incentives, but no guaranteed money. They can move on at any point. If he decides he doesn't want to adapt to the Patriot way, if it's not working out from a system fit, if his injury is greater than they expected, it's no problem for New England. They move on. They have Stidham and Hoyer, the plan that they've had all along. If it works, it's like a lottery ticket. They win big. And next year, you know, if they want to, they can franchise them. They can. It seems like there's options. I don't know if there's anything in the contract that gives Cam some sort of rights if he has success or if there's anything built in like that. This is all 100%. In New England's favor.
By the way, does it tell me that Jared Stidham, they're not into him? Is that what it tells me?
I don't think it's they're not into him. It's if you have an opportunity to sign the league MVP with no risk, or former league MVP with no risk, and you've got a young, unproven quarterback that you like a lot and a veteran journeyman that you don't know how he'll do, why not bring this guy in and take a look at it? Now, that being said, it's going to be disruptive. It's going to change the dynamic of the building because if Stidham wasn't playing well, the veterans aren't going to be hollering for Hoyer. It may be like a quiet sort of hollering, But if Stidham for some reason starts and doesn't play well and Cam's there, the whole world's going to be hollering for Cam. And if Stidham starts, the world and Cam's there, the world's going to wonder how that's possible.
Yeah. By the way, they announced the Cam signing 17 minutes after they were handed a fine of $1.1 million and had third round pick taken away. It felt very New England the way they did that. I don't think the timing was a coincidence, right?
Well, that's why I keep trying to figure out whether Cam had any guaranteed money. Let's say he had a couple million dollars guaranteed. It's worth it from a PR perspective. I don't know how much you'd have to pay a PR firm to transform an announcement like that in a quiet off season into something that becomes so positive for your team, for your fan base, for your perception around the league, for your odds. I mean, it's amazing the value of the Cam signing from a publicity standpoint to offset what would have been an avalanche of negative publicity. That alone is worth anything they may have had to give Cam, you know, up front.
So when you coached in the NFL, you never had to deal with anything quite like COVID. So it is a fluid situation. Epidemiologists can disagree on how equipped you should be or the risks you should take. So what do you make about right now coming back in player safety? What do you make about the standards being set right now by the NFL?
Well, here's where I've been frustrated. There's been a lot of talk about Tom Brady working out with players or any number of quarterbacks who have been working out and groups that have been working out together. To me, if you don't want that to happen, you should have opened up the facilities. And just like with a restaurant, you have a soft opening. It gives you an opportunity to bring the guys in, to get them tested, to establish best practices in the building, to make it as safe an environment for them to work together as possible. But to just complain about these guys working together on their own, that's going to happen. And it's going to continue to happen. You saw Cam and Mohamed Sanu working out just yesterday or it being talked about. They should have brought guys in, figured this out. Now everybody's going to come in on the 28th. You've got this massive influx of players. Nobody really knows how it's going to work. And it's a toss-up in terms of what happens in these early phases.
You know, Doug Gottlieb was on earlier, and we looked up a stat. 33% of free agents in the NFL actually hit. They fit. They work. 6 out of 10 do not. So the Cam thing is interesting because New England and Carolina, it's just a different culture. It's a different playbook. You know, it's really funny about that. Take me to your experience about going and getting free agents and why the percentages are so low on the success hit rate.
Well, I remember in New England, I wasn't there at the time. Remember they signed a Darius Thomas?
Yes.
And it was a big money contract. And there's another example of two organizations that operate differently from a culture perspective. And that's where a lot of the friction came, is it just was a hard adjustment for Darius to make to what was expected in New England. And here's the other thing I'll say is when guys came into New England, whether it's Corey Dillon or take your pick, whichever free agent came in, you always had Tom Brady in the locker room to help support the message. You had the greatest player of all time. You had this incredible amount of success, and this player was willing to be coached in a very hard way. He was willing to abide by the rules that were in place. Now you take that player out of the mix, and you're trying to fit Cam into the culture. It's really difficult to do. And New England is unique from that perspective because it's not for everybody. It's not for every coach. It's not for every player. You have to adjust to the way they do things, or you've got to move on. And it's difficult for a lot of players to understand and appreciate that.
Yeah. The celebrating, you know, doesn't bother me because Gronk could be goofy, but Gronk eventually acquiesced and became a complete, utter grinder. And you could see Gronk over time there became more of a Patriot than they became the Gronkster. So it's all this stuff is fascinating. Eric, you got a thought on that?
Well, I just think, Colin, when you're so used to being the star and you're so used to having your name on the marquee, and people accommodating the things that that help you and support you and make you happy, and then you go to an environment where you're just another guy, it's a really difficult thing for any human being to go through. And you also go from making $20 million a year to having an unguaranteed minimum deal with incentives. I mean, it's a hard pill to swallow. And I'll be really impressed if Cam is able to go there and make it work.
Good stuff, Eric Mangini. Coach, great talking to you. Enjoy your summer.